be happy. In every life we have some trouble.
Hello, this is Gail Moskowitz, and thank you for listening to Mental Health Matters. On today's show, we are going to discuss menopause. As you know, Mental Health Matters is a program dedicated to issues pertaining to mental health, interpersonal relations, addiction, sex and sexuality, and discussing healthy ways in which to live a more thoughtful and emotionally honest and fulfilling life. Each week, we highlight an issue, discuss it, after which you, the audience, have an opportunity to ask questions or weigh in on the subject. The number at which to reach us today is 649-9737, 649-9737. Mental Health Matters comes to you every Thursday at 1 p.m. on WRIR 97.3 FM. You can also listen to the program in real time by logging on to WRIR's website, www.wrir.org. The show will be available for your to listen to by this evening, along with all the past shows by logging on to my website, which you can get to by logging on to WRIR's website. I am happy to send you a link to my site if you email me at yourmentalhealthmatters@gmail.com. Those are the letters yourmentalhealthmatters@gmail.com. Also, feel free to send me your comments, questions, suggestions, or your thoughts maybe for a future show. So today, we're going to discuss the ups and downs of menopause and the kinds of things that going through menopause might cause women to feel or to think. And it's interesting to me because I hear people call menopause all sorts of things that are negative. And in some ways, it's the exact same language that I have heard people use to describe the functions of a woman's cycle. And it bothers me so much to hear that even as we move into the precipice of aging and of wisdom, that we still use that language. I've read in the last couple of weeks about menopause. I've been getting through things, and I hear words like battle and ending, and it just it's jarring to me. Battle? Oh my gosh, what a thought. So women have spent decades feeling isolated and frustrated about menopause because there really is, at times, very little written about it. So today we have Dr. Wendy Klein, the Associate Professor Emeritus of Medicine in Obstetrics and Gynecology at the Virginia Commonwealth University School of Medicine, here with us today because all issues around menopause is her expertise. And among Wendy's amazing accomplishments in her life, the one she likes to highlight is one that's really near and dear to all of us here in Richmond, Virginia, which is that she co-founded VCU's Institute of Women's Health and the Women's Health Center. And this center's been around for about 15 years, and it is an oasis for women in this community. And Wendy, I thank you for coming and welcome you to the show.
Thank you for having me.
I hope you had a great Thanksgiving.
Did, thank you.
Good, good. So let's get right to talking about menopause. This weekend, I was walking with a friend. I was having this conversation with her about menopause because we're both at that age. And we couldn't figure out exactly when one is considered to have gone through menopause. And it made me think about the conversation you and I would have today. So it seems like a silly question or an elementary question, but when does menopause start? Is it when you stop menstruating altogether, or is it the process that leads up to the end of menstruation?
Excellent question.
Oh, good.
So what happens is there is a perimenopausal phase, which is the transitional phase. That can begin months to years before menopause. I like to tell people that the ovaries don't just stop, they sputter. And so there is a transitional phase leading up to the point at which your periods stop. When you have had no periods at all for 12 months, then you are officially in menopause. That's the official definition.
Okay.
Prior to that time, when you are perimenopausal, you can still have some of the symptoms that people associate with menopause. So you may have hot flashes even when you're still having periods. I think women, unfortunately, we're not prepared for this, and we think that when you're menopausal, your periods just stop. They don't. The hallmark of perimenopause is irregularity. You may skip a period. You may skip several, then get another one. You may get too many periods. Your flow may be lighter, your flow may be heavier. That kind of unpredictability is the hallmark of your body preparing for menopause. So that's perimenopause.
And it's different for everyone.
I like to say, if you look at a room full of women, as differently as we look and feel and think, that is how differently each woman experiences life passages like menopause. Just like everyone's periods are different. How each of us experiences menopause is different. For the majority of women, menopause is not troublesome, actually. What happens is there's a bell curve. So there's about 20%, or there's a minority of women for whom menopause is a breeze. You know, period stop, no problems, nothing. There's a bell curve in the middle where you get the majority of women who have symptoms that are transient. So almost, for most women, symptoms abate by themselves over a period of a year, 2 years, up to 5 years, and they go away. Then there is a 20% of women who have troubling symptoms that won't quit. Those are the women who struggle some and who may need to treat their symptoms. That's the hard group to treat.
You're listening to Mental Health Matters. We're talking to Dr. Wendy Klein today about menopause. If you have any questions for Dr. Klein today, please feel free to call us at 649-9737. 649-9737. So, first you say that, so you make it clear, once you have not had your period at all for 12 months, then you're considered being in menopause.
Right, officially.
So there's that officially. So there's that perimenopausal symptoms that happen beforehand, which is a process of your body moving into quitting.
Exactly.
And you actually just told me that for some people it can go on for 5 years and even more?
Yes.
Oh, that is striking.
Yes.
So I want to just say this, and it might sound odd, but I'm going to go on the record here. I have really loved the monthly flow of my body. I love it. I love the rhythm. I think that it is both physically and spiritually grounding. And I have always hated the way women, and men as well, speak about how horrible women are during this period. And I now hear the same bad jokes about women and menopause. So what are the symptoms that cause people to make those awful jokes, and are women more prone to anxiety and depression at this stage of their lives?
What happens is that there is a lot of hormonal flux and irregularity, as you know, and what we do see is emotional roller coastering. We call it emotional lability and irritability. That is what we see commonly. You know, I do agree with you, and I loved your description of how grounding it can be to have a monthly cycle. I like for people to think about the attitude of other cultures who like to think of women who are menopausal and aging as entering an age of wisdom.
I love that.
So we become wise women. And we enter a phase where we are free of the hassles, because cycles can have some hassles associated with them. You enter a phase where you should feel liberated.
So, Wendy, I'm going to let you finish that in a second. But we actually have a caller, so let me get to them. This is Gail Moskowitz. You're on Mental Health Matters. Do you have a question for Dr. Klein?
Hi, my name is Zara, and first of all, I really want to appreciate that you guys are talking about this. This is a topic of discussion today on the radio. I think it's very important to talk about women's health issues and stuff that we don't normally talk about and we don't normally see on television or in newspapers and stuff. So I really, really appreciate that this is being talked about. Also, my question for Dr. Wendy is, has she seen me? I'm Pakistani and I'm 24, and of course I'm not quite at the age of menopause yet, but I was wondering, does it matter, like, cultural backgrounds, and of course, like, it differs from diet to diet and schedule to schedule, and, you know, how we interact. Of course, like, it also matters how we interact with other women and men and, you know, our relationships and stuff like that. So that was my question. Like, how has she ever treated anyone on, like, a varying scale of, you know, different cultural backgrounds, and how that has affected the process of menopause?
That is a great question. It's a wonderful question. And, Zara, why don't you hang up and let Dr. Klein answer the question on air. And thank you very much for calling, and
thank
I appreciate you
so
listening.
Much.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
That is an excellent question. And actually, there was a major study called the SWAN study, the study of women across the nation, and it looked at different ethnic groups. And interestingly, what we found, it was a very large study, is that women of color actually seem to experience more symptoms than Caucasian women. Caucasian women seem to experience more symptoms than Asian women. And so there is interesting variation in that sense. Aside from that, there is the cultural component. The other cultures are, I think, a little more adept at handling aging and recognizing that aging can be a graceful process. As you well know, in other cultures, older women are more greatly respected, greatly revered, treated with some deference. In our culture, we don't see that. In our culture, aging is mostly negative, and so it is incumbent upon us to try to accept that we can age with grace, and we can handle these symptoms, not see this as a struggle, but rather as a life passage. In terms of cultural issues, as you mentioned, you said you were Pakistani, I think we need to be very sensitive to issues around different cultures, but in terms of menopause, I don't see that much difference. In terms of ethnic groups, what I see is that each woman alone has certain needs. Some women want to be treated, others don't want to be treated. Some people struggle with their symptoms, others don't. And so it's really, really based on each individual.
Zara said one thing that I'm interested in, which is, does diet have an effect on
another
on
great
symptoms?
Question. That was a great question. And yes, you know, what we noticed, as I said, Asian women, particularly in Japan, don't seem to be as troubled by what we call vasomotor symptoms, hot flashes, which can be really bothersome. And so there has been a lot of attention paid to whether soy in the diet has made a difference for those women. Unfortunately, when we study soy in blinded trials, in randomized controlled trials where we give some women soy and others not, we cannot find a difference, any difference other than placebo, in hot flashes. So we're not seeing that. And we have really tried to find some causative dietary factor, but we have not been able to find that.
And I guess on some level, just like everything else, if you eat properly and you exercise, you're going to feel better and be able to deal with whatever it is your body's going through.
Of course.
So what is the general age at which one goes through menopause?
The average age is considered to be from 45 to 55, with 50 being the midpoint. So people can enter, you know, there is again a bell curve. So you see women entering menopause all along that spectrum.
And is going through menopause at an early age a negative for the overall health of a woman?
These are such good questions.
I'm so glad.
These are such good questions. So here's the thing. As you know, women have had an advantage over men in terms of several disease states. We used to think that heart disease was a disease of men. Now we know that it's an equal opportunity killer. The thing is, women don't develop those symptoms until after they're menopausal. There seems to be some protective effect conferred by higher estrogen levels, both in terms of heart disease and also in terms of bone. We all know that. Once you lose estrogen and enter menopause, women who have genetic risk for osteoporosis or environmental risks like smoking, alcohol, you know, excessive bad habits tend to worsen your risk for osteoporosis. But once you lose your estrogen, that risk goes way up. So there are some risks associated.
In that regard, then. Yeah. Yes, that's interesting. And a question that I had that came to mind when I was reading back over these, I began my menses early in life. Matter of fact, I have a sister who's 2 years older than I am, and I began my menses prior to her beginning hers, which is why she's 5 inches taller than me, I think. I'm not sure. But and then, you know, I've gone quite late. So I just wondered if is there a, you know, when you start, when you finish, is there some connection?
No. There, you know, if we had some of these answers, it would be great. But when we look at lifetime exposure to estrogen, that can be a risk factor for breast cancer. So starting your period way early and ending it way late can actually be slightly increase your risk for breast cancer.
Isn't that interesting?
But, you know, the greatest risk factor for breast cancer is age. So there are many risks, and, you know, again, that's not one you can control. I don't think in other regards it matters. And what's interesting is that there is no relationship between severity of menopausal symptoms and the serum level of estradiol in your blood. Estradiol is the active form of estrogen. Some women have low estradiol levels and still have bad symptoms. So we can't, that's why if you go to a doctor and you complain of symptoms and he or she says, I'm going to check your estrogen level, you're wasting your money.
Very,
or I'm going to test your saliva, because there's really no correlation between that level and the severity of symptoms.
So how do you know? I mean, my OB, who I just love so much, she says, you know, when you quit, come back. We'll do about, you know, when you're done, year. I mean, she just, like, she refuses to kind of give into my, well, how do I know if I'm perimenopausal? And, well, how old are you? Such and such. Yeah, you're probably perimenopausal. She just won't get into that with me.
Well, then she's wonderful.
How do you know?
Because it's what we call a clinical presentation. There is no black and white magic recipe. I can't look it up in a book. There's no special number. There is a blood test called an FSH, follicle stimulating hormone. It is a chemical that is produced by your brain to produce follicles, to stimulate your ovary to pop eggs out. When your supply of eggs is done, your brain doesn't know that, and it keeps sending out that FSH. And in fact, the level of FSH goes up, because your ovaries are sitting there going, sorry, we're done, and your brain keeps sending out that hormone. Well, when that level goes up high and stays up, that is one definitive marker of menopause. So that can be checked. The problem with it is in the perimenopausal phase, it goes up and down. Mm. And so if you check it on one day and it's high, that doesn't mean, you know, until you're actually all done, it doesn't go up and stay up. And as I said, before that, it fluctuates. So it's a little bit tricky. But it's really a clinical presentation. You are menopausal when your periods have stopped.
So interesting. The other thing that I am reflecting on all of this week, when I was a young woman and I started becoming a therapist and sitting with women and sitting with older women and sitting with younger women, all of my aunts, my mother, everyone seemed to have had a hysterectomy. It seemed that if any woman went to a physician to talk about a problem in their their reproductive life, or they had bumps or lumps or fibroids, that the medical community responded by whapping out those ovaries. And I was trying to figure out, is that my imagination? Have we turned a corner in prescribing that kind of radical surgery? And maybe also if you can tell people what a hysterectomy is.
Okay. Let's start with that. That's a great question. In the old days, and you're absolutely right, in the old days, when people would talk about hysterectomy, that meant their uterus was removed and also the ovaries. However, they used to call it a total hysterectomy. That's very confusing. Hysterectomy really only refers to the uterus. That's it. Okay. When you remove the ovaries, that's called an oophorectomy. In the old days, and I think there were many, many reasons for this, when women had hysterectomies, they used to automatically take out the ovaries. Several points that I need to make. Number one, if it ain't broke, we don't fix it. We don't anymore recommend automatically taking out the ovaries. Some doctors who are in a time warp will still say to you, well, we'll take them out. We're going to be in there anyway, just in case you
may get cancer. We're in the neighborhood.
Right. My answer is, okay, I'm going to do a hernia operation on you. And while I'm doing that, let me just take away your testicles, just in case. You know, there was a time when medicine was completely dominated by a very paternalistic approach. Medicine was a male field. I can remember being young. I wanted my first gynecologist back in the day. We're talking 40 years ago. I could not find a woman. There weren't any women doctors, and it's very hard to find. With the entry of women into medicine, and now I'm sure you know that 50% of all medical school classes are women, I really think that that has shifted the medical culture to be far more sensitive to issues relevant to women's health. We are far less apt to just go in there and take out ovaries for no reason. The other thing that has hopefully put the brakes on taking out the reproductive organs for any reason at all is that now we have so much better imaging techniques. So we can do ultrasounds. In the old days, if women were bleeding, we did not have a way to image without really aggressive intervention. You couldn't see what was going on, so the safest thing to do was remove the uterus and, you know, as I said, often the ovaries.
Yes,
nowadays, we can do all kinds of non-invasive ultrasounds, CT scans, MRIs, biopsies, laparoscopic visualization. So there are lots of things we can do before you have to resort to something radical.
And I have one more question on that I'm going to ask in a second. This is Gail Moskowitz. You're listening to Mental Health Matters. Our guest today is Dr. Wendy Klein, and we're talking about menopause. It's a great conversation. We welcome your questions. If you'd like to call, 649-9737. So my next question, a follow-up to that is, so if you have a hysterectomy does it result in the same symptoms as menopause? Or if you have, well, you answer that question.
Another excellent question. There is so much confusion about this. Removing the uterus does not precipitate symptoms. Removing both ovaries absolutely brings about symptoms. One of the things...
Because you get thrown right into menopause.
It's what's called surgical menopause, and your body is suddenly deprived not only of estrogen, but, you know, there's a whole interplay of hormones that are made by the ovaries, and there are far more subtle proteins that are produced. And when you take away the ovaries and you throw someone into surgical menopause, often the symptoms are really bad. So we don't like to do that unless we have to. And, you know, there are even doctors who will say, well, I'll just take one ovary out. And actually, that's better than removing both, because it does leave you with an ovary that produces hormones. Personally, I don't think there's any reason to remove them unless you have a known risk for ovarian cancer.
And if you have ovarian cancer, would one have both their ovaries and their uterus taken out?
Yes.
Because you want to...
Yes.
So now let's begin to talk about how to respond to menopause. Again, it's important to me, just like when I was pregnant or my monthly cycle, not to look at all those things as having anything really to do with being well or sick. That it was, it's just, to me, the whole notion of your reproductive cycle is so important and grounding and spiritual and all about being feminine and all about the creation. I mean, it's so big to me. So when people talk to me about what they're going to do to manage what they're feeling, I really like to keep that separate in my mind from treatment, because to me it's not treatment. So in that regard, tell us the latest thoughts about hormone replacement. We only have 4 minutes left. The show goes so quickly, you're going to have to come back. So tell me about hormone replacement.
Well, in a thumbnail, this is a very controversial and very confusing issue because the media has distorted a lot of the science. There was a period of time in the 90s where everybody loved hormone therapy. We thought it protected women from heart disease. We were giving it to everybody. Then came the Women's Health Initiative, which was not a treatment trial. What people need to understand is the Women's Health Initiative only looked at preventing disease, not treating disease. It kept women who were severely symptomatic out. There were 27,000 women, but they took out women with bad hot flashes in order to blind the treatment, right? It was blinded, controlled, randomized. So what you had is two-thirds of the women being treated were over age 60. That lots of women were over age 70, and they were giving these women hormones who didn't need them. So that in itself precipitated symptoms. We have very little time, but the bottom line is you don't need to be treated unless you are having troubling symptoms. If you are having disturbed sleep or terrible vasomotor symptoms, these can be treated. You have to look at individual risk factors. You have to, you know, the other thing is that nowadays we use tiny doses. We have found we don't need to use the big doses that they used to use. Because, yes, if you use high doses and you keep women on hormones for a long time, yes, you can increase risk for breast cancer and other problems. But nowadays, for example, vaginal dryness. Easy to treat, vaginal estrogen, very safe. This can be, you know, you can get this from your healthcare provider. There's no reason to suffer with a lot of symptoms.
And there's no reason to get treatment if you're not having symptoms.
If you don't
symptoms.
Need them, exactly.
And that's really important. So if you're having a good open talk with your healthcare provider, then you stay in a relationship with that person. They're your team. You need to feel like you're on that team with them. And Wendy, I cannot thank you enough for coming today. I hope you'll come back.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to be here.
We'll continue this conversation. The upside of menopause is the notion of the gathering of wisdom. And that's what you heard today, lots of wisdom from Dr. Wendy Klein. We're thrilled that you were here today. Next week, we're going to talk with Valerie Keating, who's a local guidance counselor, and we're going to talk about the trials and tribulations of being a teenager and working with teenagers. So listen again next Thursday at 1 to Mental Health Matters. This is Gail Moskowitz.
Be happy. In every life we have some trouble.